to closing, which is a depiction of Rich Rosura.
I may need some help in terms of covering the subject matter because my brain is not working 100%. So you can make up the rest, which at this point in time might be about 95%. All of you together can help. So we'll go through, and if you have any questions, you can ask as we go.
And then the exam will be here in the theatre next Monday at 7 o'clock. I'll leave the exam with Chetan Prabhu, and he will give it to you. You have 2 hours, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and then hand it back, and then we'll work out marking. I may not mark it for a while, let's see. If I can, I will. Okay, so Vritrasura.
Okay, so this is a very interesting pastime. Vritrasura was, in his previous life, he was a great devotee. His name was? What is his name? Chitraketu. Chitraketu. So we're about to hear the pastime now about Chitraketu. We've started the 14th chapter. So we're hearing about Chitraketu. That was previous to Vritrasura. But the pastime begins with the appearance of Vritrasura. So, in the beginning of the 7th chapter, we see that Brihaspati, he has entered into the assembly of the demigods, and being filled with pride, or being filled with unnecessary attachment to opulence, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishwarya Prasaktanam, then one's consciousness becomes bewildered. So the nature of the devatas, the demigods, is that their consciousness becomes bewildered. And the nature of Indra is that his consciousness has become bewildered by material things. So this is very common. You see for devotees, all of us, that when we get a new pair of shoes or a new sari or a new pair of glasses or a new car or something, then we become bewildered. We become affected by it. So it is quite, you could say, like natural for a conditioned soul, especially in Swarga or the heavenly planet, someone in Indra's position, to be bewildered by the material energy. So he has become too much proud, so much so that when his own guru, Brihaspati, enters the assembly, he does not offer him proper respect. He does not get off his throne, and he does not offer his obeisances to his guru. So understanding the mentality of Indra, Brihaspati chooses to leave the assembly. So you'll see that quite often, the spiritual master, the senior Vaishnava, one way that they will correct us or chastise us or bring us to our senses is by ignoring us. And there are many examples where Srila Prabhupada would do that. Actually, when Prabhupada was extremely displeased, you hear in the pastimes of Hari Sori Prabhu, I've been listening to him speak about his time with Prabhupada, and when Prabhupada was extremely angry, then he would just totally ignore the devotee. So Brihaspati was disappointed with Indra. And in order to correct Indra, he showed him his mercy. And how did he show his mercy to Indra? Then he just ignored him. He just left. He didn't say anything to Indra. He didn't embarrass him or correct him or chastise him. He simply left. But as soon as that happened, Indra came to his senses, and then he realized, I've committed a great mistake. So realizing that he committed a great mistake, immediately he began to repent. So this is the good quality of the devotee. The good quality of a devotee is that we may make mistakes, and we do make mistakes in devotional service, but we must be willing to rectify those mistakes immediately. If you ever offend a devotee, or if you displease someone, then you should rectify that immediately. Don't let it go on. Too often devotees let things go on for years and years and years. Sometimes the husband and wife don't even speak to each other for 2 weeks, just over some minor incident like that. So this is unnecessary. We should rectify things immediately. Actually, that was Prabhupada's mood and Prabhupada's way of dealing with things. If there were disputes between devotees or disagreements between devotees, then Srila Prabhupada would ask the devotees to come immediately. And Prabhupada would sit down and he would speak. He said, what is the problem? Like that. And then he would try to resolve the situation immediately. So we see that Indra, he understands that he has offended Brihaspati, and he does the correct thing. What is the correct thing to do? It is to immediately rectify the situation. So he does the right thing. So he's a pious devotee, but he became bewildered. So we should not judge him too heavily, because we do the same thing in our own lives. You know, we commit offences to devotees or ignore them or something like that. And because of that, then problems arise. So he is not doing anything different to what a normal devotee would do. A very advanced devotee would not do that, but a ordinary devotee would do that. So he's an ordinary devotee in some respects, like us. And so he's made a mistake, but he rectifies it immediately. So that is his good situation. So then we see that there are six types of offences that one can commit to devotees. Now, I planned to get here a little earlier and have everything written up on the board, but I didn't because I had too much going on today and I couldn't keep up with it all. So, but I'll read them out to you. Is that okay? If I just read them to you? I wrote them on the board 3 months ago or something anyway, so you probably got them in your notes, but I'll just go over them again. So please forgive me for the... actually, it's not that one, it's the other one. Okay. So, to not feel joy upon seeing a devotee. This is the first kind of Vaishnava aparad. There are six types which are there. So to not feel joy upon seeing a devotee. So even when you just see a devotee and your face does not light up, you do not become happy, you do not smile at the devotee, you do not offer pleasing words to the devotee, then that's an offense, because it causes some pain in the heart of the devotee. And we know the famous story of Rupa Goswami, that one devotee came and Rupa Goswami was in trance, he was in meditation. He didn't even realize that devotee was there. And he laughed because while he was in his samadhi, he was meditating on Radha and Krishna. And there was some joke which took place between Radha and Krishna. So then he laughed. He didn't realize the devotee was there externally. That devotee became offended because he thought, oh, Rupa Goswami is laughing at me. The devotee had a little bit of a deformity. And then he thought, oh, Rupa Goswami, that's, you know, peculiar, he's laughing. So he left and he had some bad feeling. He was hurt. And then Rupa Goswami, his meditation broke. Even though he's a pure devotee, he's an eternal associate of Krishna, but his meditation broke. So then he said to Sanatana Goswami, he said, what happened? My meditation has broke. And Sanatana Goswami said, well, maybe some devotee came to see you and you didn't receive him properly. So then he went around and he offered his obeisance to all the different devotees, and finally he came to that devotee. And then that devotee had also spoken to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami said, oh no, Rupa Goswami, he was not ignoring you, he just didn't realize that you were there. So then he came and he offered obeisances to Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami offered obeisances to him, and then they rectified the situation. And then both of them were blissful afterwards. And then Rupa Goswami's meditation, he entered back into his meditation once again. So we should be very careful, even feeling negative towards a devotee, even just having a like a negative feeling towards a devotee, that's actually an offense like that. To not smile when you see a devotee, or to not be happy when you see a devotee. Then the next offense, which is a little more serious, is to not offer respects or obeisances to a devotee. So a devotee comes and you don't offer your obeisances. You fail to offer your obeisances. That's a type of offense. One should always offer one's obeisances, especially to a more senior devotee. You should offer your respects or your obeisances to that devotee. It says not to respect the devotees. It means not to receive them properly. A devotee comes to your home and then you don't receive them properly. As we've discussed previously, when a devotee comes, then you have to offer sweet words. You have to offer a place to sit. You have to offer some drinking water. This is the minimum that you'll offer to a devotee. But actually, we should offer more if we can. So you just explain the situation.
Is it that offensive?
It's not offensive if you handle it properly. Yeah, if you handle it properly. Like if you say to the devotee, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going out now because I have some appointment I have to keep. But if you do it in such a pleasing way, the devotee does not become disturbed, then there's no problem. And just say, please come back later. I'll be back later. Please come back. Okay. So then, to not offer respect to a devotee means not to receive them properly. So we should give all the devotees as much as we can, which is at our disposal. So whatever facility we have, then we should offer that to the devotees. And we should offer as much respect as we can to the devotees. Devotees should be respected. So whenever they come, we should offer them respect and obeisances. Then the next offense, which is slightly more serious, is to get angry at a devotee. To become angry at a devotee. That means to raise the voice or to become like that. So you have to be very careful, because anger is a very powerful force, and it can create a great deal of trouble in our lives if it's not controlled. So you have to be very careful about becoming angry towards the devotees. Between husband and wife, also you have to be careful of this, because it's much more common between the husband and the wife. It happens much more regularly and much more easy. But you have to remember constantly that your husband and wife, they are devotees. Actually, Gaurakshodas Babaji Maharaj says that you should offer your obeisances to your wife every morning. He says, because your wife is a Vaishnavi. So the husband should offer obeisances to the wife every morning. Like that. And the wife should offer obeisances to the husband every morning. That should be the respect. They should be competing with each other to offer obeisances first. I'll let you all digest that. I can see some of you are having trouble digesting the statements. But you should, in other words, it should be that respectful mood between the husband and the wife. It should be a mood of respect, genuine love and affection. Actually, because my wife left the other day, she went to she went overseas. She'd been planning a trip for a long time, so I wasn't going to see her for a month or something. So I went and offered my obeisances to her before she left. She looked at me and said, "What are you doing?" So anyway, this is the way the world is. Half of my obeisances, I said, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm offering my obeisances because I won't see you for some time." And she said, "Oh, okay." Like that. So you can do it. It's good. It means at least the mood in the heart is right, like that. I mean, at least there should be a mood of respect towards the other devotee. That's the point. So between the husband and wife, they should be careful, because I see sometimes the husbands and the wives, they become too familiar with each other, and they say things which are actually not appropriate, and they act in each other, towards each other, which is actually not appropriate. We should actually remember that we're devotees, like that. And also family members, brothers and sisters and all these things, fathers and mothers and family members that are devotees, sometimes they don't, because we forget, because we're family. So then we treat each other, but it's actually not appropriate. We're devotees now, so there are etiquettes.
What about a
kami? You should be respectful. Should be respectful to everyone. That's Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So be careful about becoming angry at devotees. Only senior devotees can become angry at the junior devotees like that. So when the spiritual master chastises, or one of the senior devotee chastises, then that is considered to be for our benefit. And we should see it that way. Just like Giriraj Maharaj, then he said to Srila Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, sometimes you're very heavy with us." And Prabhupada said, "You should feel very fortunate that someone cares about you enough that they are willing to point out your discrepancies and your faults and correct you like that." So we should see it like that. If a senior devotee is angry to us, that is for our benefit. And Srila Prabhupada actually said that he preferred to be chastised by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur than to be praised by him. So we should feel more benefit from the correction. We want the correction, actually. That's the end of the point.
Do you think that
It's not an offence if it doesn't come out like that. Like, sometimes I get angry with other devotees. Like, actually, I was driving up in the car tonight, and another devotee was driving, and they weren't driving, you know, I would have driven differently to the way they were driving. So I was a bit angry, actually, because I was very tired. But then I tried to control it. I tried to think, well, you know, if I say something, then it'll probably make the situation worse, and they'll take it the wrong way and like that. So sometimes it's better to control it. And then don't verbalize it if you can. You know, if you have to say it, then try to say it nicely. Say it humbly. Like that. So. But there's no reaction if you don't say it. Like that. So. So at this point in the class, we'll turn off all the mobile phones. That's the fourth offense. Is to let mobile phones go off in the Vaishnava assembly. Like that. Okay, so... don't see joy with the devotees, don't offer respects, get angry. And then the next one is to become envious towards another devotee. So envy is the cause of all of our problems in the material world. And generally, it's also the cause of all the problems between the devotees, when we become envious of the other devotees. Generally, we see we don't like to offer respect to the other devotees. Why?
Envy.
Yeah, because of envy. Or in other words, we don't like to see someone superior to us. Envy means that we want to see someone in an inferior position. We want to bring the person down instead of lift them up. But a devotee, he is opposite in his mentality. He doesn't want to bring devotees down. He wants to push them up or bring them closer to Krishna. There's one artist who drew a painting of Krishna, and all the gopis were pushing Srimati Radharani towards Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, this is actually the mood in the spiritual world. The mood in the spiritual world is that the devotees will push the other devotees towards Krishna first. The mood in the material world is that because we are Kanishta Adhikaris, because we're very low level devotees, we always want to be in front. You know, we always want to make ourselves more prominent. Put ourselves in front to serve the guru. Or even you'll see that sometimes the devotees, they're in their enthusiasm to serve the guru, but because they're neophyte in their mentality, they'll step on so many other devotees in order to... they're serving the guru, but then they're not respecting the other devotees along the way. So actually, that's not pleasing to the guru like that. I remember numerous times when I would serve... my spiritual master without my other god brothers and so forth, and quite often he'd be getting into a car with one of his god brothers, and because we were disciples of this particular person, we'd all run to that side of the car to open the door and do all that like that. And he would always say to us, he'd always say, no, you serve him first, don't worry about me, worry about him, look after him, like that. So when we become a little bit more mature in devotional service, we won't try to go to the front, but we'll stay from behind. Or in other words, we'll understand how to serve the spiritual master and Krishna in a way that pleases them more. And what pleases the spiritual master more? What pleases Krishna more? When we push others forward. Actually, that gives them greater pleasure. So that should be the mood. And actually, in our tradition, we are known as Rupanuga Vaishnavas. And why are we known as Rupanuga Vaishnavas? Because Rupa Goswami, Rupa Manjari, is the topmost devotee in the spiritual world. In the sense, she is the most intimate associate of Radharani and the most intimate disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Now, in the spiritual world, when Radha and Krishna are together in an intimate setting and the Manjaris enter in, Raghunath Das Goswami, he is known as Rati Manjari. So Rati Manjari, she is very loyal and very attached to Srimati Radharani. So as soon as she walks into the private place where Radha and Krishna are associating, immediately she goes to Radharani and begins to serve her. Because that is her mood. Radharani is her life and soul. But Rupa Manjari, who is Rupa Goswami, because we're known as Rupa Nuga Vaishnavas, Rupa Manjari, she walks in, but she doesn't go to Radharani, she goes to Krishna. And why does she go to Krishna? Because that will give Radharani more pleasure. If she serves Krishna, then Radharani is more pleased because she's also extremely attached to Radharani. So this is the mood of their devotees. Now, we don't try to go directly to Krishna or directly to the spiritual master, but we serve those who are serving them. All right. So we don't try to go be prominent. We don't try to go forward, but we always try to assist. We always try to be servant of the servant of the servant, and we push the other devotees forward. And actually, we're happy when the other devotees become more prominent and get credit. That is the mood of the devotees. So we have to learn that mentality. Not that we always want to be at the front, or it has to be us who is serving the guru. I remember when I was a young devotee, you know, I always wanted to be the one who was serving the guru. You know, standing right next to him in the photographs, and you know, you see all the devotees when the guru is having a photograph, and all the devotees are standing like right next to the guru, you know, in the photograph like that. But then after some time, if you become more mature as a devotee, you don't think like that. You think, let the other devotees go forward, right? And then I'll just be in the background, or I'll just be an assistant, or like that. That should be the mood, actually. Like that. So... what's that? Rati Manjari. In the six Goswamis, that is Raghunath Das Goswami. Okay. To envy a devotee. And then the next offense is to blaspheme a devotee. That is more serious. Not just to feel envious, but to actually say something negative. Now, this is something that we do on a daily basis, practically. We're always putting down other devotees. We're always saying improper things about other devotees, right? Often when neophyte devotees come together, then what do? They begin to criticize others. This is the mentality of the neophyte. They are like a fly. The fly is always looking for the sore or the impure thing. So the neophyte devotees, when they come together, because they're neophytes, what do? They begin to criticize. They say, oh, did you hear what that one did? And did you hear what this one did? And it just becomes Prajalpa, becomes Gramya Kata, becomes Vaishnav Aparad. And what happens is that everyone's consciousness goes down, one commits offences, and one loses a taste for chanting the holy name. So to actually blaspheme a devotee, this is a more serious offence. So, you know, to envy a devotee, or maybe anger can come out in different ways, but to envy a devotee, or to not feel joy upon seeing a devotee, these are offences in the mind. But more serious than offending one in the mind is to offend one with one's words. And then the sixth offense is to kill a devotee.
In the fifth offense, which is to blaspheme devotees, so as you said, the neophytes get together and they are talking about some of the devotees. To blaspheme devotees is to actually directly tell the devotee something bad. Or even when you speak in the discussion, what is the level of...
Well, it means that either way that you're going to lose Krishna's mercy and you'll lose your taste for chanting. But according to the degree that, obviously if you say something directly to that person, they'll become hurt and then immediately you'll feel a change in your consciousness. You'll feel Krishna is displeased. But then also if you're a little sensitive, then if you're doing that with other devotees, you'll also feel Krishna is becoming displeased. And you'll feel that when you begin to lose taste for chanting. Like that. So, I mean, we can say one is more serious than the other, but the point is we should not do either, really. So then the sixth offense is to physically harm a devotee. To actually physically strike a devotee or something. It's a very serious offense. And the worst kind of physical offences to kill the devotee. So please refrain from all of these six offences as much as possible, because sadhu ninda, which is the first offence in chanting the holy name, it is a very serious offence. And if one commits sadhu ninda, as we've explained over the years, then the result is then one will commit guru avagya, which means one will disobey the orders of the spiritual master. If you offend devotees, you'll lose your taste for chanting, and then you won't be able to follow the guru's instructions. Or, alternatively, as in the place with, as in the example of Indra in this pastime, he committed guru avagya, which is the third offence against the holy name, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or to not offer him proper respect, or to see him as an ordinary person. So Indra did this. What is the result? The result is then, once again, you lose your taste, and then you begin to criticize devotees. So these offences are interconnected, and they're very serious, and they're great impediments in spiritual life. And quite often you'll see the reason, it's not the only reason, but one of the prominent reasons why people leave devotional service is because they commit Vaishnava Aparadha. It's actually one of the main reasons why people leave.
I just want to ask a question. Sometimes we see devotees not very serious in their devotional life, and then we try to say, oh, okay, we're not going to be associating with them because they're not serious, or we try to sort of not blaspheme them, but try to sort of downgrade them, that we don't want to be. What sort of impact does that have in terms of, I mean, are we committing a Vaishnava Aparadha? The fact that they're not serious and we are trying to say, yeah, we're trying to improve, and then we're not associating with them.
So if another devotee, it really depends. I mean, say someone's not as serious as you, but they're sincere, then you should try to help them advance in Krishna consciousness like that. But if someone is a materialistic devotee, which means Kanishta Adhikari, so he's materialistic, so not so serious, but also materialistic in nature, then we should avoid the association. It says you should respect them in your mind, and whenever you meet them, you should be respectful, but you should not associate intimately with them. Like that. But it doesn't mean you disrespect them. It just means that you don't associate so intimately with them. But if they're sincere, if they're trying for things, but they're just struggling, then you should give them association, you should try to lift them up. Like that. But if they're just materialistic, you know, they like to do too many material activities like that, then you just have to distance yourself. That's all. Any other points?
Okay. So, after offending Brihaspati, Indra looks for Brihaspati, he cannot find him. So then, he goes to Lord Brahma.
But just before that, Indra is attacked by the demons. Shukracharya, who is the guru of the demons, he advises the demons, who are actually cousins of the suras, or the demigods, he advises them, now is a good time to attack their kingdom, because they've become weakened, they've offended Brihaspati. But all of you have been worshipping your guru very faithfully, so at this point in time, you are strong, they are weak, so you should attack them now. And you will defeat them and overcome their kingdom. So this shows that if one worships the guru, one will get all success in spiritual life. And if one neglects the guru, then one will fail in spiritual life. So you see, for devotees, if they worship the guru very attentively, then they become very successful and all auspiciousness takes place. But for those who do not worship the guru and neglect the guru, the instructions of the guru, or physically, when the guru is present, physically not serving him attentively, then the result is that one will become weak in one's devotional service.
Like they are worshipping their guru, they are becoming strong in the strength, so physically, but how is it connected to spiritual advancement?
Because if you worship the guru nicely, then you'll advance in Krishna consciousness. Yasha prasada, bhagavat prasado.
In this case, there's more like material.
Yeah, okay, but the lesson is there. That's the point. The lesson is there. Don't worry about what they're doing. They're demigods. They can do what they want to do. But yeah, the Bhagavatam is teaching us to respect the spiritual master. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, Acharya mam vajaniyam. You should understand the Acharya is myself. Krishna says that. He said, you should see the Acharya as myself. In other words, you should offer the Guru the same respect you would offer to Krishna. Like that. And I've been listening to Harisori Prabhu's lectures about Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very emphatic about his disciples treating him properly. Not that Prabhupada was thinking, I need the worship, or I need the adoration, or I need the distinction, or I need the profit, or I need the recognition. But Prabhupada was just teaching his disciples the proper etiquette, the sad achar, when it comes to worshipping the spiritual master. And Prabhupada was very emphatic. So we do not become neglectful. We have to be attentive to every detail. And Prabhupada was attentive to every detail. Constantly, he would be pointing out, oh, you've done this and you have done that. And then, like Harisori Prabhu just said, Prabhupada was constantly pointing out, no, this is not correct, that is not correct, that is not correct. Why? Because the Guru is the Ashraya Vigraha. Ashraya Vigraha means he is the form of Krishna who gives you shelter and who trains you and qualifies you to come back to Krishna. So the spiritual master is training us so that we will become qualified one day to serve Krishna himself in the spiritual world. So therefore the Guru is pointing out all the defects because he wants you to come up in your service to a very high level. So because the demons worshipped the Guru very nicely, they became blessed and they conquered the demigods. So then the demigods headed by Indra, they go and visit Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, he said to them that if you want to become reinstated once again, then you should go and worship Vishwa Rupa. But then Brahma does warn them. Lord Brahma says, but you must understand, he is partial to the demons. Like that. So you can go and worship him, but he has some partiality. He's connected to the demons, like that. So then they go and they worship him. And they pray to Vishwa Rupa, and then he gives them the Narayan Kavacha. So then we see in the next chapter, which is chapter 8, I think the chapter is entitled The Narayan Kavacha Shield. So it's a very powerful mantra, series of mantras, which one chants, and by chanting this Narayan Kavacha, the one becomes protected by the different forms of Lord Narayan himself. So then Vishwa Rupa says to Indra and to the demigods that if you chant this Narayan Kavacha, you'll become powerful once again. And then you will be able to fight with the demons and you'll be able to defeat them, being protected by Lord Narayan. And then you will be able to once again become reinstated in your position. What is that?
To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra is one of the ritualistic activities offering the Vedas as putting chanting Narayan Kavacha to see the material protection. Isn't that the
way? Yeah, I mean the demigods, they're not just trying to reclaim the heavenly planet simply for their material enjoyment, but they're servitors of the Lord and they have a duty to perform on behalf of Krishna. So they're mixed devotees. They're attached to opulence, but they're also very attached to serving the Lord dutifully. So it's not purely a material motive, but it's not purely a spiritual motive either. They're mixed devotees. So. Okay, so then chapter 9 is the appearance of the demon Ritrasura. So then Indra, he goes to I just lost my train of thought. He goes to Vishwa Rupa because he finds out that Vishwa Rupa has been chanting mantras quietly for the benefit of the demons. So he's doing the yajna and he's offering the oblations into the fire and he chants the mantra on behalf of the demigods. But when the demigods are not listening, then he also quietly chants a mantra on behalf of the demons. So obviously Indra is not so happy when he finds this out. So then Indra takes his thunderbolt and he goes to Vishwa Rupa and he cuts off his three heads. And then his father, whose name is Twashta, who is a very powerful Brahmana, very powerful, that he becomes very upset. So then in order to retaliate and to correct Indra, then he creates one demon called Vritrasura, who appears from the Jagya. Okay, that's good. Is that at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. So then Indra, after killing Vishwarupa, then he had to suffer for 1 year because of the offense of killing Vishwarupa, who was a Brahmana, like that. So then he distributed the reactions to the earth, to the trees, to the water, and to the women. Yeah, to those four, like that. So then...
I wanted to ask before, but I forgot. He said he could mitigate the offense of killing Vishwarupa, but he didn't. Why he wouldn't mitigate, and he would distribute to all the trees, why he wouldn't mitigate it? It's not clear to me.
It's not always clear why these great personalities do these things. It's not always clear why they do it. So I can't say for sure why he did like that. So it's not clear. But, one reason is that the Lord may have a desire like that. There may be one reason. So there's different reasons which are there.
He did suffer for 1 year, and after that he did something.
Sometimes also devotees, they like to accept the offense to set an example for others. In other words, he knew he'd done the wrong thing on one level, so then maybe he was setting an example to others to accept the reaction for his improper behavior. So there could be different reasons why. So then, Vritrasura appears, being created by Twashta.
So then, Vritrasura is attacked by the different demigods, and all the demigods begin to throw their weapons at him.
Now we have to understand that the weapons of the demigods are extremely powerful. These are not small weapons. Right? Actually, Srila Prabhupada one time, devotees said, sometimes I would ask Prabhupada about World War. I'd say, Prabhupada, what about World War III? If it happens, will it happen? Like that. When Prabhupada was on the planet, there was a lot of tension between America and Russia at the time. So some devotees would ask about this. One time Prabhupada said, even if the war begins and the missiles are flying kind of around the earth in the outer space, like from one country to another, Prabhupada said the demigods can just grab them mid-air and just throw them into outer space. So the demigods are so powerful, even a nuclear weapon, they can just grab it as it flies past and then just throw it into outer space so it doesn't affect anyone. So Prabhupada said if the demigods want, they can protect all the devotees. So they're very powerful. So their weapons are even more powerful than a nuclear weapon. And they threw all of these weapons at Vritrasura, and he simply opened his mouth and swallowed them. He just opened his mouth and they all went in and he swallowed them. Like that. So he's an extremely powerful personality. So they all became very afraid. You can imagine that you throw your best weapon at someone and they simply open their mouth and just swallow it. Right. So they became very afraid, so they all went to perform some austerities and pray to the Paramatma. So then Lord Vishnu, he appears. And when Lord Vishnu appears, then he says to the demigods, you have to approach the sage whose name is Dadichi. And when you go to Dadichi, he will offer his body to you. And from his bones... you forge a thunderbolt weapon, and with this weapon you'll be able to destroy Vritrasura. You'll defeat him. So then all the demigods, they go to Dadichi. So this is chapter 10, the battle between the demigods and Vritrasura. So first of all, Dadichi, he tests the demigods. So they come to him and they ask him, they say, please, can you give us your body But then he acts as if he is attached. But he's just testing the demigods. Actually, he's willing to surrender fully to the Lord's desire. So this at this point in time, the Bhagavad Gita, we're seeing a very high level of devotional attitude or surrender. That a devotee is willing to do anything to please the Lord, even give up his own body. So you can just imagine, if you were being asked to give up your body for the service of the Lord, would you be able to do that? Like that. Now, of course, many of us might think, yes, we would, but whether or not we would or not, that's another thing. It's a very high level of surrender. So the Bhagavatam is now gradually leading us towards full surrender to Krishna. The Dadichi is such a surrendered and powerful devotee that his mentality is that he will give up, if necessary, his own body. And he does that, actually. He tests the demigods, but when he's satisfied with the demigods' attitude, then he says to them, now you can take my body, and you can forge a weapon from my bones, and Vishwakarma, he forges a weapon, and he makes an invincible thunderbolt, which will be thrown by Indra to defeat Vritrasura. So then, the demigods... What's that? The thunderbolt? Yeah, it was a very powerful thunderbolt. It was very powerful. So, when the demigods, they come back and they begin to attack Vritrasura along with all the demons, then the demons attack the demigods very forcefully. They throw many weapons at them, so many weapons that it actually clouds the sky. But when the weapons rain down upon the demigods, then they just destroy all of the weapons. And then the demons become very fearful, because they realize their greatest attack or their most powerful attack is not enough to counter the demigods. The demigods easily repel them. So then all the demons begin to flee. So then Vritrasura, he begins to chastise all the demons. He says, where are you going? This is not the attitude of a real Kshatriya. So Srila Prabhupada actually emphasized that when we are serving Krishna, we should be willing to serve Krishna to the death. Even in the 70s when Prabhupada was here, there were several occasions where even the deities were attacked in certain temples in our movement. And Prabhupada said to the devotees, you should be willing to give up your life to protect Krishna, to protect the deity. So this should be the attitude of the devotee. He should be willing to give up his life in the service of Krishna. So Vritrasura, he chastises him. He said, what sort of chaturis are you? No, you should be willing to give up your life, but simply you're running away. And then the demigods, because the demons are running, they begin to attack them from behind, which is also a cowardly act. So then Vritrasura begins to chastise them also. He says, this is not proper behavior either. They're running away, now you're attacking them from behind. So in other words, a pure devotee has perfect consciousness. He acts properly under all circumstances. He's completely selfless. You see, the demons are simply absorbed in their own selves. And the demons are simply worried about their own life. And the demigods are absorbed in themselves as well. And they're willing to attack an enemy who is running away, who has turned their back. But the pure devotee, such as Vritrasura, he is not worried about himself. So even he's willing to die in this battle because he understands if I die in this battle, I'll attain the supreme destination. So this is the attitude of a devotee. A devotee should have this pure devotional attitude of full surrender. We're willing even to give up our life in Krishna's service. As long as we're serving Krishna, if we live or die, that is up to Krishna. But we just simply want to surrender to the best of our ability. Then, the next chapter is called The Transcendental Qualities of Vritrasura. So the demons, they don't listen to Vrichasura, they continue to run away. And then Vrichasura, he becomes disgusted with the demigods, so he begins to trample them under his feet. So he begins to just walk around the battlefield and just step on all the demigods like that, because he's disgusted with their attitude of just attacking the demons while they're running away. Then Indra, he becomes very upset that Indra is beginning to destroy the demigods, so he throws a club at Vrichasura. Vrichasura catches it in one hand and then uses that club and he just smashes Airavata, the elephant, and Indra, and he pushes them right back. And they become overwhelmed by his potency in battle. So then, Vrichasura, he begins to speak to Indra and he chastises him that you have killed Vishwarupa, a brahmana. So your quality is not so perfect. So at this point in time, Indra begins to realize that Vrichasura is not an ordinary devotee. He realizes actually he is a pure devotee. And we see in the consciousness of Vrichasura, he shows us the example of pure devotional service to Krishna, which is what the Bhagavatam is ultimately leading us towards, to become fully surrendered to Krishna. So Vrichasura is now revealing, even though he appears to be a demon, he's actually the topmost devotee. So one of the most important lessons in the Bhagavatam is not to judge devotees according to the external appearance. But you have to see a devotee according to their words and their activities. Because whatever is in the mind of the devotee, it will come expressed by the word and the activity. So therefore it is actually said that it's very hard to understand the mind of a Vaishnava. So you can't judge devotees externally. Because you may think, well, this devotee is like that or this devotee is like that. But then you'll see in due course of time, by their actions and their behavior, their actual inner heart will be manifest. In other words, what their level of consciousness is, that will become manifest by what they say and what they do in due course of time. So we should be careful not to judge devotees according to the external appearances, but rather judge the devotees by how they serve Krishna and how they speak about Krishna. So then, Vrichasura, he says to Indra that you should take this weapon that you've been given, the thunderbolt which has been made of Dadichi's bones, and you should kill me. And he actually says to Indra, don't even worry about using your other weapons, they're useless. He said, you don't have the power to kill me. But the only way that you can kill me is that if you use this weapon, which has personally been given to you by the instruction of the Lord himself, then you can kill me. So a devotee will accept his destiny as Krishna's will. Just like you'll see in the Mahabharata, you'll see many great examples. Just like Dronacharya, he trained Drishtadyumna in the art of military science. Now he knew that when he trained Drishtadyumna, that Drishtadyumna had appeared in the same way that Vrichasura did, out of the sacrificial fire. And he had appeared just to kill Dronacharya. That was the sole purpose of his appearance. But Dronacharya, he understood that this boy is going to kill me in the future. That is my destiny. I cannot escape it. So he fully taught Drishtadyumna the entire military science of the Dhanurveda. He taught him every secret. He gave him all the astras, all the weapons. And he knew that in the future, he would be killed by that boy. So in the Vedic culture, in the Vedic civilization, we accept our destiny. We don't try to fight against our destiny or try to change our destiny. What will come. A devotee is simply interested in serving Krishna. And he will leave the result up to Krishna. Whatever Krishna decides, he will be satisfied with. So Vrichasura says to Indra,
whether to fight or not to fight, what's the destiny? Maybe destiny is to fight.
Yeah.
So that's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, so then you have to take some instruction from senior persons. If you're not sure what to do, then you have to take the instruction. They'll give you the advice what to do. So then the next chapter, chapter 12, is called Ritrasurya's Glorious Death. So then, in the fight, Ritrasura, he struck Indra so hard that Indra actually dropped the weapon. And then Ritrasura, he looked at him, and Indra wouldn't pick up the weapon, because Kshatriya, if he drops the weapon on the battlefield, he won't pick it up. He considers that he's been defeated. So then Ritrasura said, just pick the weapon up and just kill me. He said, this is my destiny. He said, actually, I want to return to the association of the devotees. I want to go back into the spiritual world. So he said, just take the weapon and just kill me. So when Indra heard the words of Ritrasura, he became convinced that Ritrasura was a pure devotee. And he was completely unattached to this world. He was amazed, actually, that this demon was actually a pure devotee. He was in the association of a pure devotee. So he takes up the weapon, and then I think so, yeah. I think he throws it and he knocks off his second arm. That's right. Because I think Prabhupada mentions in the purport that it was that weapon. Whether it was or not, it doesn't matter. Okay. But I think it was. So, he throws that particular weapon, and he cuts off the other arm of Indra, of Ritrasura. Then Ritrasura, his only way to respond to him or fight with him is that he swallows him. He puts out his tongue and he grabs Indra and Aryabhata and swallows him. So then he takes him into his belly. So then at that point in time, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that Ritrasura feels that now the battle is finished. I've defeated Indra. So then he goes into samadhi. He thinks, what's the use? It's all over now. So he goes into samadhi and he begins to meditate on the lotus feet of Sankarshan, or Lord Narayan. Then Indra, he's inside, and he's protected by the Narayan Kavacha. So he's protected by the armor of the mantras, which has been chanted by him, the names of Lord Narayan. So then he feels that suddenly Ritrasura has become silent. He's very quiet. So then with the thunderbolt, he cuts open the belly, he enters out of the belly, and then he looks up and he sees the huge head, and he sees that he is still, so he throws the thunderbolt, and the thunderbolt goes into the neck. So then it says it takes 1 year for it to cut all the way through. And Ritrasura is just in samadhi and meditation. It cuts through, and then when it finally cuts through, then it's seen by the demigods that his soul leaves the body and transcends to the spiritual world. Such a glorious death. Like that. Ritrasura ki. Then chapter 13 is called King Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reaction. Because he felt that he defeated him.
Look, he had not used that
weapon yet. I know, but if you swallow someone, usually you think they're not going to come back out. So. I don't know. I can't answer your question.
No, but that weapon was the one who was going to kill him.
I can't answer your question. My only answer is that if you swallow someone, usually they don't come back out. So. Even for him,
Richasura just thinks that whether he's killed by that weapon or not, now he's going to transcend. He's given up all his attachment to this world. So he thinks, okay, if I'm not killed on the battlefield, because you can go back to Godhead in two ways. You can die on the battlefield and receive a glorious destination, or you can, by the yoga process, you can follow the process of samadhi and then you can attain that. So he thinks, okay, I'll follow that process. If I can't be killed, then I'll follow that. I can't answer your questions. So then chapter 13 is called? Yeah, Indra is afflicted by sinful reaction. So then, after he defeats Richasura, then a sin personified, a very horrible looking Chandala woman, she begins to follow Indra wherever he goes. And he cannot escape the sinful reaction of having killed a pure devotee, a brahmana. So therefore he goes to Manasa Sarovara and he enters deep within the water and he performs his penance for 1,000 years in order to purify himself. In the meantime, Nahush, who is a member of the Kuru dynasty from the previous generations, he has gone to the heavenly planets and then he takes Indra's position for a period of time. But then he tries to enjoy Indra's wife. And then Indra, eventually, he finishes his meditation, then he goes back and he reclaims that situation. But he's deeply affected by the fact that he's now associated with Richasura and he's become purified. So that is the pastime of Richasura. Tomorrow night we'll continue with the pastime of Chitraketu. And then next Monday night, then there'll be an exam on the Richasura pastime. Any further questions or comments?
I can't understand one thing. And see, Indra suffered from the sin twice. One after, first one after killing the Sura. So, and then he suffered again by killing the Sura. So, I mean, both the sins, suffering looks like the same to me.
Maybe. Maybe, I don't know. I don't think it's that important.
Okay.
You important? Okay. Any other points?
So, thinking about the protection of the deity, Prabhupada said, we have in South India, during the regime of Mughalan, especially during the Aurangzeb, most of the temples were getting destroyed or demolished. And there were instances where the persons devoted concerned the protection of the deities, they would hold the deities under their belly, and then pile of dead bodies around them with blood oozing because of the soldiers, but still they would not leave the deities and they stick to them, and that's how we find today what we find in South India in temples is because of the sacrifice made by those pure devotees who stuck to their deities at the expense of their own family, of their life.
Yeah, that's pure devotion. Any other point?
In the beginning of 13th chapter, actually Indra will be reluctant to do this thing, but then they will tell that already I have killed a Brahmana and so much like I had to distribute among these, so I don't want. Then the sages will encourage, no, you do it, we can contract it through the Ashwamedha. In that section it is said that one cannot contract, like the seventh offense, which is chanting of on the strength of the holy name.
So one cannot think
that I can do this and then commit sin or that is wrong. But in the beginning that is explained and then about the Chandala and all that.
Any
other points? So I have a doubt here. It's one thing. Indra went to that Manasarovar lake and he meditated for almost 1,000 years. Has he never got an opportunity to become a yogi?
Everyone's got an opportunity to become a pure devotee, but Indra is not becoming a pure devotee. It's like all of us, we've got the opportunity to become pure devotees, but we're not. So it takes time to become a pure devotee, that's all.
He meditated for 1,000 years, and in one lifetime,
yeah, everyone can become a pure devotee. The demigods are taking birth in the Sankirtan movement, because in Kali Yuga you can become a pure devotee very quickly in this one lifetime if you fully surrender to Lord Chaitanya.
Earlier
so.
It is mentioned that the demigods got a chance. They got a chance to become pure devotees, but they did not pray to Lord Vishnu to become pure devotees. And Lord Vishnu was a bit disappointed with them. They came to them, offered in the ninth chapter, the demigods are offering huge prayers to the Lord. And all the prayers are about, they say everything nice to the Lord, that you are Paramatma and you are glorious, and you are beyond the three modes of material nature. But towards the end, as a fellow Shruti, they don't ask the Lord for pure devotion. Instead, they said, please help us in killing so, and the Lord is feeling disappointed, but I am giving them a chance, I am giving my darshan, but they are still not asking pure devotion. So Indra also got a chance and so the demigods. They missed that opportunity.
Actually, Indra says in one of these verses that although I am the king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence. He says that, he condemns himself, saying that who would want all this at the cost of falling down?
He stood on them.
Yeah.
It's in the Bhagavatam, so. Okay, Srila Prabhupada.
Sure.
So tomorrow night we'll continue with Chitra Ketra. So, I'm going to.